Let us get started. Welcome. Welcome to this 222nd edition of Your Calling. Actually, this is a very special number, Schnapps number, we call it. I'd like to give a special welcome to our guests today. You can see them already, and I'll introduce them in more detail in a moment. Alexandra will need to speak at the European Parliament, at the plenary, so she'll be back. So if she's gone, she's bored, she'll be back after having done her duty. My name is Maximilian Fries. I'm the Managing Director of Europe Calling. It's my pleasure to moderate tonight's meeting. But before we get started, a few housekeeping announcements. We'll be speaking a mix of German and English, and to make sure everybody understands everything, we have two wonderful interpreters with us again today, and you can find the interpreting function under the small globe in the control bar.
German, welcome to this 222nd Europe Calling webinar. Today we will speak a mix of German and English. Should you need help with that, you can check out the little globe in the control panel and choose English or German, but in your case, English. Gehe ich wieder zurück auf Deutsch.
Now back to German. And let me show you, with the help of a slide, what we're planning for tonight. So we'll start with our two presentations. We have Professor Jamek Grabovic with us at the University College Dublin, University Massachusetts Amherst, and Karin Kohn, PhD, Executive Director, Center for AI and Digital Humanism. So, two lectures, if you like. We're going to learn a lot tonight. And then we have Alexandra Gese, once she's back from the plenary. We'll have her political reaction and look at what things might be looking like in the future. And at the end, there'll be a lot of time left for any question. And as always, Europe Calling will be recorded. You can also ask questions. With more than 2,500 registrations, we will need your help in choosing the most important questions. There's more in the chat now. The link you'll find there, link to Slido. And as always, let me remind you that Europe Calling will be recorded, and then it'll be put online on YouTube and as a podcast. So please keep this in mind when asking questions. So much for introduction. Let's get started with our first lecture. We have Jamek Grabovic, Assistant Professor of Computer Science at University College Dublin, Ireland, and is also Adjunct Professor of Computer Science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, the United States. He's head of the SIMS Lab, meaning Socially Intelligent Media and Systems. That's SIMS for you, SIMS Lab. And he's here today mainly because he has become quite famous. It's quite a splash with his study. He also writes about this issue in a very easy to understand way on the blog Uncommon Good. So, dear Jamek, we are very excited. Good to have you.
Hello, everyone. This is my pleasure to be here. And I'm super excited about the discussions we'll have here. We did this study that I'm about to present in collaboration with ZDF, the German public TV channel. And they developed this broadcast. They aired it in the week of the election, German federal election in 2025. Then they recently, I think 10 days ago, they developed an unabated version of that video. And Max, are you going to play that the beginning of that video first? Is that the plan? And then I switch to the presentation I have that will go a little bit more in depth about the study we conducted. So the idea is to
Meinungsfreiheit. Elon Musk sieht sich und seine Plattform
Freedom of expression. Elon Musk sees himself and his platform X as champions.
There must also be freedom of speech such that the people know what the truth is.
If speech is constrained in a fundamental way, you just can't expect people to make the right decision.
Musk's loudest ally is US Vice President J.D. Vance.
There is a new sheriff in town, and what I worry about is the threat from within. Free speech, I fear, is in retreat.
Die Trump-Regierung und die Tech-Bosse.
The Trump administration and the tech bosses, they're fighting together against the EU's digital laws for freedom of expression as Musk likes it. But how far does freedom of speech go on X? We ask the users. I personally wouldn't mind if there's false information, because that way everyone can express themselves freely. I think freedom of expression is obviously important, but hate and incitement aren't necessarily opinions. Ahead of the German federal election, we run an experiment. Does X keep its promise to stay neutral? Two dolls represent two new accounts. They follow 64 politicians, 8 from each party in the Bundestag. But they don't read, like, or comment anything. So for X's algorithm, they're users without any traits.
By der Datenanalyse hilft Przemysław Grabowicz, der mit seinem Team im irischen
Przemysław Grabowicz, whose team in Dublin analyzes social media platforms, helps with the data analysis.
X is politically impartial, so what we did is we set up a couple of accounts, and then throughout January, we every half an hour we opened newsfeed on X.
X offers two reading feeds, a following feed and a for you feed. The first is the user selection. The second is X's recommendation. We compare. Politicians from centrist parties post as much or more than the AfD. Yet X recommends content from SPD, the Greens, FDP and CDU less often. AfD content, by contrast, is shown more than twice as often. Posts from the BSW are even shown 6 times as often as their share in posts in our sample. Why are more tweets from the political fringes shown more often? It's not due to interactions like likes alone.
You see them obtaining per tweet on average similar numbers of engagements. Nevertheless, they don't appear as often in the feeds.
We confront X with our findings. At the EU headquarters of the company, also in Dublin, we receive no response.
Im deutschen Wahlkampf mischte Musk auch ganz
Elon Musk also personally intervened in the German election campaign, so how neutral can his platform be? In January, X especially often recommends one candidate to our test accounts, Alice Weidel, and the tweets by Elon Musk are seen, other ones both users see the most frequently, even though they don't follow him, but whatever Musk retweets gains a lot of reach. Alice Weidel's tweets reached 10 to 15 million users, compared to a usual average of under 1 million. Merz, Scholz and Habeck received no such boost from Musk. Was that still free speech or a risk to democracy? Flashback to 2022. EU Commissioner Thierry Breton travels to Elon Musk, bringing a new EU law aimed at stronger regulation of online platforms. We are on the same page, says Musk, and Breton advises, if you have questions, just reach out to me.
This is what we did, and I'm happy to see that for your line.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Vous étiez tellement puissant, ou est-ce que vous étiez simplement naïf?
Ni puissance, ni naïveté. Il y avait tout simplement l'obligation qui était la mienne de m'assurer que tous les patrons des grandes plateformes comprenaient bien la finalité et se préparer à l'appliquer.
Meanwhile, the European Commission ran a campaign in Western style, portraying the Digital Services Act, or DSA, as the new sheriff in town. All member states and 90% of MEPs voted in favor.
Un tel soutien du Parlement européen, s'il y avait, on avait touché à un cheveu de la liberté d'expression. Ce que régule le DSA, c'est un côté singulier et tout à fait nouveau dans notre histoire humaine. C'est le fait que sur ces plateformes, on peut amplifier massivement, grâce à des algorithmes, des messages en créant une espèce de tsunami, perturber, avoir des actions délétères sur les uns ou sur les autres.
So schreibt das Gesetz den Plattformen vor.
So the Act requires platforms to take measures against any actual or foreseeable negative impact on public debate, electoral processes, and public safety. Does that apply to X and its recommendation system? Since mid-January, EU Commissioner Henna Virkkunen from Finland has been investigating that. In February, we confront her with the results of our test.
Now investigating that how X is mitigating and assessing the systematic risks and for how the recommender system is working.
The EU will never become a bargaining chip in a trade dispute with the US.
It's very difficult to see that because, of course, in Europe we have to defend our values and our rules. And in Europe we want to have same rules, offline world and also online world. So I think this is very fair and clear for everybody.
So sieht sie das.
That's how she sees it. Others see it as censorship. Around 70 people attended a demonstration which, thanks to a retweet by Musk, reached 24 million viewers. Freedom of speech, the way Musk likes it.
Excellent. Thank you. I wanted to open with this video because I think there is so many people here and maybe everyone has different background. And I wanted to make sure that our study, which is, you know, a research study with a quite narrow focus, actually, that it is put in the broader context. So let me now switch to the presentation. I will switch to the sharing my screen and discuss the study that we conducted in more detail. And also how it is related to the Digital Services Act and other relevant points. So this is a research we conducted. The lead author is Tabia. She's a PhD student at the University of Vermont. She is collaborating closely with me. There are also a couple of students here from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where I was previously. I recently moved to University College Dublin, partly because of simplified of the fact that there is the Digital Services Act, which provides researchers like me with a legally binding way to access data from very large online platforms, and my research is very much depending on that. So that was one of the reasons why I've moved. But I still, my research lab is actually in between University of Massachusetts Amherst and University College Dublin, and also this study, of course, it has been conducted already when I was at University College Dublin. The research team also includes Paul Krauss from University of Regensburg and myself. All right, so if you want to read the details of the study, here's the paper. It's on Zenodo. It has received quite a bit of attention for a research paper. It's kind of amazing. And I'm very happy to also be able to talk about this here in this webinar. If you want, again, I won't cover all the details. If you want to learn more, then just please go to the see the paper. It's freely available to everyone. We are working on an extended version of that paper, and I'll come to this in a second. The main research question we have is whether the default newsfeed algorithm of X, whether it was politically balanced before the German federal election. And in order to answer this question, we created these two sock puppet accounts. And this is what is mentioned in the video. There are these mannequins appearing. Each of those accounts followed about eight German politicians from one of the eight political parties, German political parties, federal parties. And so using these accounts, we were able to see what these users would see in their feeds. And we basically collected that data every half an hour throughout January, February, and so on. This is the first data set I'm listing here. We also collected all posts of German politicians, 436 German politicians, basically all politicians who are active on X. And then we ran this comparative analysis that you could see already in the video. I will talk a little bit more about that in the next slides. And a regression analysis, which actually is not mentioned in the video. And this is something what I think, Alexandra, you especially, you will be interested in, because it kind of go in depth about, you know, potentially explaining why we see this results, that we see some overrepresentation of posts created by AFD in comparison to the fraction of tweets that they their parliamentarians tweeted. So this is what you are seeing in this figure. This is the same figure that is actually appearing in the video, but now it's just different colors. So the red bars here correspond to the fraction of feed appearances among tweets of German parliamentarians in comparison to the fraction of tweets that German parliamentarians tweeted separately for each of the parties. And you can see that even though AFD parliamentary politicians, they tweeted 15% of tweets, their posts appeared 38% of times. Whereas for other parties, especially from the center or left center, SPD, Greens, FDP, they, even though they tweeted even potentially more than AFD politicians, that's the case for Greens and FDP, they appeared actually less often than they appeared maybe in the case of SPD, just one, you know, they post appeared 1% of times. So that's quite striking. We also saw that PSW, that is another but extreme populist party in Germany, of course you know it better than me, that it also, even though it didn't tweet much, it also has been overrepresented in the feed. this result were already shown in the video, but it was also told that Elon Musk actually, among all accounts that you can look at the feed of these users, and you can ask yourself, okay, who appeared most often in the feeds of these users? These users only follow German politicians. The user that appeared the most, it was Elon Musk. Okay, so this may be obvious, right? Because Elon Musk owns X. But the second most appearing user was Alex Jones. Alex Jones is a far right media person, influencer, conspiracy theorist from the United States, the creator of InfoWars and multiple other initiatives. Then the next two users most appearing were from AFD. Overall, among the top 100 most appearing users in the feed, 47 of posts were from AFD or related accounts. So that's, again, quite surprising. But we try to explain this result. There can be reasons for this apparent imbalance, political imbalances in the feed. So the main reason is that, excuse me, there can be differing numbers of engagements per post for politicians of different parties. And it, indeed, for AFD politicians, they tend to have more achieve more engagement, especially Alice Weidel. And we did see that. So we thought, okay, maybe this is the reason why they appear more often in the feed. Also, the other reason could be, of course, whether a user is follower or not. Again, we studied here algorithmic feed. This algorithmic feed, they don't only show posts from users that these subpopulated users created followed, but they also show posts. Actually, 80% of posts is from people they didn't follow. So that's also another important factor. Excuse me. I must say I'm a little bit sick, so I have a little bit of cold. So my voice, I hope I'll continue well, but I need probably to drink some water in between. Okay, and then of course it could be the case that political affiliation affects the number of appearances in the feed. Now, we would like to include other factors into our explanations. There could be other factors, like, for instance, the match between the fit between post content and user interest. That's a very important factor. User clicks, what users click on. In our case, the SoapPocket account didn't, we didn't actually make them do anything else than just follow some politicians. They wouldn't be engaging within the post. We could actually include this in the experiment, but that would complicate the experiment. We didn't do that. And then things like trending topics, what matters at the time, that could also influence the number of appearances. It may be the case that some politicians they are more tuned in with trending topics than others. And then we created this model that essentially tried to explain the number of occurrences per post with the number of engagement that this post would get, the political affiliation of the post author, and whether the post author is followed or not by our SoapPocket users. And we found that the number of engagements mattered the most. This was the predictor that most explained the appearances in feed. But we also found that political affiliation of authors seems to be explaining significantly the fraction of appearances, the number of appearances in a feed of a post. We did this analysis for, I think, 48,000 of posts of this 400 politicians. This was a larger data set that we worked with here. Now, you may be wondering, is this a good model? And in fact, we are still developing this model. A perfect model would explain 100% of the variance, this is a technical term, in the feed occurrence counts. Our initial model, the one that is actually published on Zenodo, that the article I pointed you to at the very beginning, it only achieved 7%. It explained only 7% of the variance. So not, far from perfect. Our recently developed nonlinear models explain 35% of the variance, which is starting to be quite high for this kind of models, given the fact that we don't even have all the factors that we should add to explain these feed appearances. So these are starting to become not just significant, but also kind of large effects that we are seeing here. We see that the fraction of appearances in a feed is explained by party affiliation. For our initial model, it was 1% of appearances. Only 1% seems like a very small number, and you know, it is relatively small. Our most recent models, they attribute more than 5% of appearances in the feed to the party affiliation. This is you know, each party may have a varying level of advantage, or if you want to call it this way. I'm actually not we are not really sure where this results, what is the nature of this result, what is the mechanics behind this result. But we did see in our initial paper that BSW, AFD, CSU were advantaged in that way. We continue to see BSW and AFD in our most recent models. We also see FDP to be getting some kind of advantage there. But again, it's still kind of, this is, I would say, these results are just adding more questions, we are seeing essentially that political affiliations matter when in determining the number of feed occurrences. But maybe it's because we are missing some factors related to feed appearances and party affiliations in our models. So our models are still imperfect. They are starting to be pretty strong, but there may be some explanation we are missing. In the end of the day, we won't have actually we won't have access to the data that we and the kind of models that we would need in order to fully explain this. In order to fully explain this, what we are observing here, I think indeed we need to talk with X, and then X, of course, didn't comment on this. Now, I did want to kind of a little bit comment on the topic of this webinar, which is what the, you know, that X influenced public opinion. Personally, I don't think we have proof of this. Although, you know, despite all the results we are seeing, right? Like, I think this all the results we are seeing, you know, they point to the direction that, well, this needs to be more investigated. But I don't think we have proofs yet that you know, there was public opinion influence. That kind of proof is very hard to get in general, at least in a kind of scientific way. In fact, the support for AFD grew only by 1-2% from the end of December to the election day. So there is not much change that actually happened. I don't know, maybe partly because our study was, of course, released in the election week, and you know, there was some growing trend, and then it kind of decayed. Who knows? At the same time, the election in Poland, I'm Polish, is going to be next. And I found this interesting. In January 2025, there was a poll conducted by, it was a poll for Rzeczpospolita, which is a top quality research, top quality rights center newspaper. And they asked, you know, if Elon Musk endorsed a candidate in Poland, would you vote for that candidate? And 11% of people said, whoever Elon Musk points to, they would vote for that person. Well, that shocks me a little. That's a huge number. I cannot believe it's that much. Now, this poll was conducted in January 2025. I think Musk influence must be smaller now because of the turmoil in the US. but who knows? That's the point I wanted to make. But even if there was, and I, you know, probably there is some influence. You know, I think there must be some influence. Otherwise, Elon Musk wouldn't be engaging in politics. then isn't Elon Musk actually free to influence voters? I think maybe this depends on jurisdiction. I think this is like foreign influence. I think it's forbidden in Poland. I am actually sure what is the status in Germany. But I'd love to hear from the panelists here. I'm not sure actually how much time I have left, but okay, probably I'm already going to wait too long.
Yeah, you're a bit on the edge now in terms of timing. So if you like, maybe do that quick.
Okay. Yes.
Leave the rest to Alexandra and to Karin and to the discussion.
Right. So, you know, there is the Digital Services Act that provides us with tools to act in situations like this, where there are potentially some systemic risks to society from online platforms. Systemic risk include unactual or foreseeable negative effects on civic discourse and electoral processes. And the tools are things like risk assessment conducted by online platform, mitigation of risk at online platforms, and data access and scrutiny for researchers like me. And this is why I'm so much interested in Digital Services Act myself. But I do want to mention that it's important too that we kind of have discussion about what do we count as negative effects. I'm not sure. Again, it may depend on jurisdiction whether foreign influence that's a negative effect or not. And the other thing is, I think for sure when there is some kind of misleading public depiction of an online platform that results in a perception that the platform is global public square, but there are biases and censorship in the platform. Well, I think then users should be clearly informed about this. There should be more transparency. And I think the Digital Services Act could make it easier for users to learn about platform biases like this ones. For instance, there could be a public facing portal for this kind of things. Okay, but with this, I will end my presentation. There are multiple different algorithms in social media platforms. We studied them at my research lab, the SIEMS lab. Here you have at UMass Amherst and also in Vermont working with me, and there's a larger group of collaborators I'm working with. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you so much for this really great introduction, this really great study. I mean, I've read the study before, but now seeing it again, it's coming back that, you know, how much that might have influenced the German election. And the bad question is we don't know. So we don't know yet. And that's, you know, it's a big problem. We have many, many questions for you. So we will have them then in the discussion. And I'm really excited now to just carry on, have like the second part of the story with Karin Kaunas. She's the executive director of DG Humanism, Think and Do Tank that supports humanistic control of artificial intelligence in Europe and beyond. And she also works on how the Digital Services Act can be implemented to avoid manipulation in social media. And she's also working on different international boards, among others on the board that is looking for or working on a code of conduct for AI models and people that working on AI models to make AI safe and work for the people. And she's also has a doctorate in law and is teaching and researching at the University in Lyon in France. And dear Karin, it's great to have you, and we're looking forward to your input.
Thank you very much. And for the sake of time, I will directly share my screen so that we will have access to the study. Just 1 second. Okay, here we go. So indeed, dghumanism.eu, that's our email address, if you, that's our website if you want to have more details about the analysis, is a think and do tanks which aims to ensure humanistic governance of AI in Europe and beyond, and fostering a digital ecosystem that works for all based on respect for fundamental rights, democracy, and the rule of law is our mission. So you see where I come from. Indeed, as a lawyer, I would like to recall that indeed, freedom of expression and information is guaranteed by the German Constitution and also by the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights. So the question for tonight is that, is there freedom of expression and information online? And if there are threats, where are they coming from? So at DG Humanism, we already did a study on TikTok, on information manipulation on TikTok in the context of the Romanian elections. And for the German elections, we did two studies, one on TikTok and one on X. The parameters were different because the two social media are different. And also we didn't want to necessarily study exactly the same thing because the timeline was not the same, but I will explain that later on with the relevant slides. So for the study concerning X, what we analyzed are all the tweets and retweets mentioning one of the main German political parties from January 4th to January 16, 2025. Why this period? Because we know that when you have astroturfing, which is basically information manipulation in the context of election with the help of bots, and this means robots, right? These are not human beings, but they are tweeting and retweeting online and some social media. The astroturfing information manipulation usually happens within 2 months before the relevant election. And here we chose beginning of January. First, it was a question of funding. Second, it was the fact that we wanted to send the results of our analysis to the European Commission for the implementation of the Digital Services Act. And also because it was a period when Trump was not yet in power. And so Elon Musk was not either. And we know that his status was rather gray. So it was easier for us to take this period. And we looked at accounts. We looked at tweets and retweets from to and citing at political parties. So it was, for example, at Die Grünen, from Die Grünen to Die Grünen, at AfD, from AfD to AfD. So we analyzed based on this search request. We analyzed almost 500,000 tweets issued by more than 130,000 X accounts. And what you see here, we usually use map because we want to inform people of what's going on online. So here you see on X, this vast blue area is basically the AfD, the pro-AfD community. It's overwhelming. It's bigger than all the other, that the size of all the other political communities, knowing that we just look at tweets and accounts which refers to political parties. Okay, not basically a fan of the AfD tweeting to another fan, etc. So the first question we used was, what is the composition of the main political communities in the German ecosystem? And the results was that most political parties have a notable audience and generate significant numbers of views, comments, and interaction. However, as you have seen in the map that I showed you previously, there is a manifest discrepancy in terms of composition among the political communities. The AfD has a much bigger account with clear messaging without opposition. We could see organic behavior from most parties. Organic means that it comes from human beings, characterized by active debates, discussions on macro topics, diverse leadership, and opposition. However, we noticed a distinctive behavior with regard to the AfD community. We noticed a significant support from sources outside the German ecosystem, which increased the AfD visibility. This is, of course, a reference to Musk accounts. And if I go back to this slide, you see here the big Elon Musk is his account. And this is one of the main support for the AfD. And as explained by the previous study, it has a big impact on the German X ecosystem. Another distinctive behavior is a lack of meaningful opposition or debate within the most visible account within the IFD community, an audience predominantly focused on sharing content published by a small group of IFD leaders and allies, and as we shall see, half of the community members only engage in retweeting without generating any original post, and often-wise, this means that these are bots, so robots. Our second question was, is there information manipulation aiming to influence the German election on the X ecosystem during, and what narrative do they set? The answer to our study is yes. Even aside the legitimate dynamic or strategies of each political community, we can clearly observe thousands of accounts that cannot be human controls. That means tweets every few minutes for months or years, participating in the debates around the elections. Most of them support clearly the AfD. We also noticed an increase of 500% of account creation since 2025, so at the beginning of January, to talk about the German election, and more than 2,000 of these new accounts were created in 2 days for the sole purpose to promote and inflate the engagement numbers around the meeting between Elon Musk and Alice Weidel, the AfD leader. These new accounts follow only people or company supported by Elon Musk, such as Tesla, SpaceX, his friend Donald Trump, or the AfD. And this pattern is coherent with the precedent analysis that established that a large part of Elon Musk followers are indeed fake or inactive accounts. So if we go back to the map, you see here there's a black hole around Elon Musk account. This is because in general, it is so big because it's inflated by bots. If we continue now with concrete examples, because it would speak to everyone. So as I said, how do we know that there is a suggestion of non-organic behavior, meaning bots? And why do we look at bots? We look at bots because if we want to know whether there is a problem with freedom of expression online, we have to consider that bots do not have freedom of expression. And if you have a recommender system in a social media, what it does is that it gives priority to some contents and not others. So it can basically suppress the freedom of expression of some people because some bots engaged heavily with some contents instead of others. So it's an artificially inflated visibility of some contents. And in our study, we saw it was in favor of the AfD. So half of the community members of the AfD only engage in retweeting without generating any original content. If you see the diagram with the distribution of accounts that only retweet, we see a large majority of these accounts belonging to the AfD, more than 40,000. And you see that there's a minimum number of accounts from other parties. There's a huge discrepancy that only retweets. Some accounts are extremely recent and appear to have been created solely for the purpose of retweeting content from AfD leaders. So here is an example. Let me introduce you to Bibi. His account, it's a fake account which was created in January 2025. It follows only five accounts, and it just retweeted content from Alice Weidel and the AfD. A beautiful example of a bot. How we can have a hint that they are bots? You look at the average number of posts per day since the user account creation. So the average user in this study has 19 tweets or retweets per day since the account creation. However, this is not the case of the top 1%, meaning that they are producing 321 tweets or retweets per day since their creation. That means actually approximately one tweet every 5 minutes around the clock, day and night, every single day since their creation, meaning you don't have the time to eat, to sleep, or do anything else. Such activity cannot be organic or managed by a human. And more than 95% of these non-organic accounts are in the AfD community, as you can see from this diagram. If we want to continue with a few examples, here you have fake accounts, for example, one created in 2024. Janine Bericht, who wrote in German. So this is AI-generated content, and which says things in favor of the AfD and the debate with the AfD and Elon Musk. And you can see here you have a yellow, a blue mark. And on all the three examples of both, you have blue marks. What does that mean? Is that it's a legitimating blue mark, which means that people would think by seeing this mark that the count is a real one, a legitimate one. Well, in reality, these are bots. This is typically a deceptive technique for inducing people in believing that they are interacting with human beings, while these are bots amplifying simply AfD consensus. We also saw a wave of account creation. So basically, usually what we saw is that we had 364 accounts talking about the German elections, which were created each week since 2023. And suddenly, we got an average of more than 1,700 accounts talking about the German election, which were created each week since 2025. This means more than 5,000 in 17 days, most of them supporting Elon Musk and the AfD community. Again, this translates a non-organic activity. You see the peak here in the first diagram. This is simply amazing and just to support the AfD. So here for the wave of account creation, we have our friend Helmut Kier, who joined Twitter on X on January 2025, and he's following only Tesla, SpaceX, Elon Musk, Ivanka Trump, and Alice Weidel, and he's promoting tweets from Elon Musk. So basically, what we can say is that Elon Musk, through his hyperactive community in the comments across all X communities, provides the AfD with a unique level of impact and an echo chamber effect that extends into the German X ecosystem. And we correlated our findings until the end of January with data available on another website, which is the one of the Bundesdatenschau. And you can have a look. It's wonderful what they did. They look at X account from all members of parliament, whatever their affiliation. And what we see is that, for example, over the last year, some for January 2024 till the end of January 2025, we see the number of impressions, the time someone looks at the tweet. We see that for all different political parties, and we saw that Die Grüne actually were the first, then other parties, and AfD was the third. However, if we look at just the 2 weeks from the 8th of January till the 21st of January, we saw that the visibility of the AfD has increased tremendously and is not in correlation with the visibility or the number of impressions of all the other political parties. And how is it correlated? It is correlated actually with the number of retweets and the number of likes in favor of the AfD. And we've seen that these retweets and likes have been produced for the most part by bots. So this is totally artificial. So this high level of discrepancy between the AfD and other political parties illustrates both the AfD inflated visibility and other parties drowning out. This is typical of what we can call reverse censorship. If there is an attack on freedom of expression, is the fact that some contents have been artificially inflated, their visibility has been artificially inflated by bots, to the detriment of other contents generated by humans. This is reverse censorship. We saw it during the period of the talk between Elon Musk and Alice Weidel, and we could see it again when Elon Musk gave a speech at an AfD rally. So this is two periods of reverse censorship. And in the meantime, we could also see when there is no reverse censorship, an amplification period whereby you have still a tons of number of likes and retweets pro AfD. So the second study, so this is for X, and basically, as I said, This was a study to demonstrate that, I mean, which demonstrates that if there is an attack on freedom of expression, it comes from bots which have been supported online artificially and for one quite a substantive part by Elon Musk's and support fake supporters of Elon Musk. We also did a TikTok analysis, and I must say we did the same modus operandi for this analysis as we did for our TikTok study regarding the Romanian elections, because we wanted to see whether we can see similar trends. So here, what we did is we didn't look at political parties' account themselves. We looked at hashtags, which refers to political parties or name of leaders of political parties. So meaning hashtags, it can be tweets and comments from anyone on TikTok. So we analyzed through this selection, we analyzed more than 2,000 channels, more than almost 1.5 million commenting accounts linked by almost 3 million comments. And we see here that you have two big major communities, and I apologize for the colors. Please, the colors do not correspond to the color of any existing political party. They are arbitrary, and sorry for this. So actually, it's quite ironic. The red community, which is the biggest one, is the pro-AfD community. The blue community is Die Linke. We see that the first biggest community is on TikTok is the AfD, and the second biggest is Die Linke. You can see that Team Olaf Scholz is really much smaller. So is Merz, CDU, FDP, and Sarah Wagenknecht. So you have a huge discrepancy in terms of size of the communities. And we looked again at information manipulation. And what we saw is that it actually happened in support of the AfD. And we checked for Die Linke as well. It didn't happen for them. But the AfD is again the biggest one. The second biggest is Die Linke. Now I invite you to look at the vote of the young people during the German election. And I think you will see that the biggest one, they would vote primarily for the AfD and second for Die Linke. So I'm not sure there is a causality here, but there is certainly a correlation. So the first question that we looked at is whether the forces what are the forces at play in the German ecosystem, and is there a level playing field among the candidates? The results are that most candidates have an audience and a significant number of views, comments, and interaction, but there is no level playing field among the candidates. The comments are clear. Alice Weidel is overwhelmingly supported everywhere, even on rival fan channels. And these comments have a significant impact on the subsequent video recommendation that these audiences will see. Why? And this is the most important point I would like to make. If a viewer of the channel has 50% of chance of being a fan of Alice Weidel, the next video shown in this channel are likely to be selected by the algorithm to appeal to Weidel's fan as well. So just to conclude, because I know we have no time, what we saw is that actually how it worked is that you would have a post where you see, for example, if we take the community of Sarah Wagenknecht, she would make a comment, then you would see a lot of blue heart, which is typical of the AfD. And through these blue hearts, and there's a tremendous amount of them, more than 160,000 blue hearts on the German TikTok, it means that the next comment people in Sarah Wagenknecht community will see content from the AfD. This is how they influence. You see, this is spam content that we see 1,000 times, and it's all blue heart emoji. It costs almost nothing, and it is very influential in order to make sure that TikTok recommender system select content from the AfD in rival parties. So I will end like this, and you can see who was targeted. So Sarah Wagenknecht community, but also some journals, the Tagesschau, Tim Bundeskanzler, so Olaf Scholz, Politik.edit, etc. So by flooding the account with pro-AFD content from pro-AFD accounts, TikTok is more likely to recommend pro-AFD channels to all the other channels on the community. And the last point is we looked at illegal content, and may I say that we found that TikTok never, never, never removed any content which express historical revisionism. We found almost 15,000 comments such as that. Nothing is said. The same goes for immigration. We found almost 15,000 comments containing anti-discriminatory statements about immigration, and nothing is done. And it favors, of course, the AFD. So I will stop at that. And is there freedom of expression and information online? Well, I would say it depends what you think about information manipulation by bots. Do you think it is legitimate, or do you think that TikTok, X, etc. should remove bots from social media so that people can really interact with other people and have access to content which corresponds to their real interests? Thank you.
Wow. I think
sorry, I got fast.
I feel we all need a break now. To 3 minutes fresh air or something like that. No, I'm kidding. But I got a lot of messages in the mealtime, like in doing both your talks, saying this, like, how can that be? And how can it be so extreme? And why is that, you know, why is there nothing being done against it? I think
exactly. Kind of thank you.
Is this the general feelings, like, what? How
thank
is that
you.
Even possible?
So that's why we're doing these studies. We're doing these studies because under the DSA, Digital Services Act, all social media should do risk assessment and mitigation of this risk, risk to political discourse, but also risk to free all fundamental rights, freedom of expression, freedom of information, and freedom of thought, free from manipulation. And this is why we're doing this study, so that citizens are aware of what's going on online, and for the European Commission and all relevant national authorities to take the necessary measures to clean up the internet from the bots and all the illegal content. This is all we're asking in respect of the freedom and for the respect of freedom of expression. Sorry.
No, completely. I feel it so much. Before we go into the discussion on like the many questions we have on Slido, so thank you much for the question. We'll go in there. I wanna ask a few questions like for better understanding of it. So Karim, so the TikTok part, right? So for X, I think it was very clear. So there are a massive an army of bots that, you know, have 500 tweets per day and interactions per day, and by that they're pushing and they're drowning out, they're pushing the AFD and drowning out all the others. So for TikTok with the comments, so is that, are those also bots commenting under those videos? So because it's for voice select, right? So there are comments, and those comments make it more likely that the TikTok algorithm then shows TikTok, a TikTok from the AFD as the next video, right? So the kind of the comments are the currency here. So who is that, again, bots, or is it organic comments? So where's that coming from?
So that's a great question. First, if you want to get the full answer to this, please support us and our studies, because we are a little think tank working pro bono and with the means that we have. But basically, I would say this is scientifically speaking and objectively speaking, this is probably both, because when you see the amount of blue hearts that we get, more than 160,000 inundating other channels, etc., this cannot be just organic, but we would need the proof of it. And there is a study which is super interesting that everyone can read, which is a study produced by Viginum. Viginum is the French unit in charge of information manipulation online. And they published a study on lessons learned from information manipulation in the context of the Romanian election. And actually, they refer to our study because they said we uncovered the modus operandi to artificially influence content on TikTok. And they do a very nice thing, which is that they they look at the links between the different social media, because this is what we would need. And you see that it comes from Telegram, and from Telegram you have some instructions and some modi operandi which are shared, and then it is reproduced on various social media. So one part is absolutely inorganic, another part might also be organic through AFD funds. The exact proportion, I cannot tell you. This would have to be further studied. It's easier to spot on X than on TikTok. It would require even more means, but obviously based on the number, it cannot be just organic, right? That's the most honest answer I can give you here based on the data we have.
Incredible. Maybe we can share the link to the Vignum study on Romania, and we'll talk about Romania a bit. I mean, if everyone knows, so Romania, there was a candidate, a far-right Russian-supported candidate, who out of the blue, from nothing, basically became front-runner in the presidential election, pushed by TikTok massively, and the Romanian officials then also assuming that this was probably even a Russian operation to do that. And the election was canceled, and this guy was now excluded from any further elections. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of things happening there also on the political side. So I wanna get Jemek.
But just to make sure, this is exactly the same modus operandi that we see on TikTok for the German election than we saw on TikTok regarding the Romanian election, which means that TikTok has done absolutely nothing. Let's be clear here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to write this down. So Jemek, I wanna get you in, because you know you did kind of this. The introduction with your study. So when you now see Karine's data, does it help to answer a couple of the open questions you have in terms of, you know, mechanisms and everything? Because, you know, it's kind of works with each other, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, so, you know, we accounted for, well, so, okay, first of all, I think I'm so happy to see all these results. This is great and very much complementary to what we've done. Note that we try to explain why AFD posts appear more often in the feeds of users, why BSW tweets appear most often than of other politicians, and despite the fact that they tweet very very lately. And you know, like in order to answer this question, we took into account the number of engagements this posts of the politicians achieve, and now I'm learning that for a you know we noticed that I didn't show the figure, but we did find that like AFD the posts of the AFD politicians they get much higher engagement rates, and now I'm wondering, you know, is this organic behavior or is it inorganic behavior, right? So we didn't take this into account. If we took this into account, if we maybe just, you know, like took into account organic engagements, I don't think this is what X is doing. Like the algorithm that determines what to show, the newsfeed algorithm that determines what to show in the feed, probably doesn't distinguish between organic and inorganic engagements, but it may, and maybe maybe it would be a good idea to do this. But like at this point, we don't know. It'd be good to know it, right? To even start talking about this. I think it's a good idea. I don't know whether he thinks it's a good idea, right? He may be thinking that that's not necessary. So you know, it depends. I don't know. I don't think we should be speaking for anyone. But like before we can start discussions, then we need to explore this. But just to mention, I think like imagine that the half of AFD engagements are fake, right? So then we would decrease them. We have to decrease the number of engagements that we put into our model and then I think you are right that this is kind of telling us something about the mechanics, right? Because this first of all, this means that political affiliation, because political, you know, this is another factor. You know, I said in have I had in my slide other factors that we didn't take into account that are related to political affiliation and occurrence in feeds. You know, engagement created by bots are such a factor because they only happen for AFD and because probably they affect appearance in feeds. So yes, this could be a potential answer. This is one of many, right? Like there could be other factors as well. There could be bias in the newsfeed algorithm baked in, or maybe, you know, other factors. I don't know, some kind of complexities of the algorithm. We again, like our model is simplified. We cannot even if we wanted to, we couldn't reproduce the full model because we don't have data. We don't have the capacity, like the hardware and so on. Although we, in collaboration with VEX, we could kind of really get to the bottom of this.
So, just one thing, if I may.
Yes, please.
Precisely, we have the tools to answer this question because the commission asked X, I mean Twitter, to keep all his data from the period so that researchers can analyze them. And we also have the principle of algorithmic transparency, which means that X is supposed to explain how its recommender system is working and how it favors one post, give more visibility to one post instead of others. So all these questions, we should be able to have the answer legally speaking, and what we can establish right now, if it is not causality, of course, because we do not have all the factors, we see strong correlations. Let's put it this way.
Thank you so much. I just want to explain to the audience what's happening right now. So we were actually expecting Alexandra here, but Alexandra needed to go to make the political point, speak about the DSA that she negotiated. She had to jump into the plenary to actually speak on the freedom of journalists in the US. Right now, she will be back in a few minutes, and then she will come in with like all the kind of political questions and, you know, what can we do and, you know, what can the DSA do. So I would just, you know, we are kind of waiting a bit and answering the questions, having discussion here. And I just have to say one other thing. I just had to smile because, you know, this interaction between Karina and Shemek now, you know, this is science, right? So this is how it works. So there are now different, you know, there's data out there, and you could see it in Shemek's eyes. So it's like, oh, something is happening there. There could be an explanation for that. So being a scientist myself, I love that. You know, it's a cool moment when things start to become, you know, an option. And so I like that very much, just as a meta observation. And now, because we don't want to talk too much, we actually go on into the question. So Our top question, of course, is about, you know, what can Europe do? And I want actually to leave that to Alexandra to answer and to discuss with us. That's why I'm actually looking. So a lot of the questions we actually on the design we have answered. So maybe on the point that, you know, because you both said, look, we are missing the data, right? And there is actually, you know, there the DSA has very strict rules that you should have access to the data. So maybe so can you explain to us a bit? So what kind of data actually can you use? And, you know, what kind of data are you actually expecting to get if you get the transparency that the law actually says you should get? So kind of how... What do you expect to get from that, and so maybe to put it like this, it's a bit complicated, it's a bit theoretical, but I wondered what that data could tell you. Maybe Karin or Shemek? Karin?
Okay, so what the data can tell, first, there is an what we ask for actually is for because there is an obligation to different things. Sorry, I'm going to answer you, but I want to be precise here. Here we need to, what we can do is to ask whether and how the following factors influence any of the systemic risks that have been spotted through the kind of studies we're doing. So risks to civic discourses, risk to freedom of expression, of freedom of information, of freedom of speech. So normally we should have information about the design of their recommender systems and any other relevant algorithmic systems, their content moderation systems, the applicable terms and conditions of the social media and their enforcements, and the data related practices of the social media. This is the kind of information we should need. And then this is for the assessment part. And when we do the mitigation, because X is supposed to mitigate the systemic risk to frontal rights and democracy, X, or actually TikTok, is supposed to adapt the design, features, or functioning of the services, including their online interfaces, adapt their terms and conditions of the enforcement, properly test and adapt the algorithmic system, and reinforce the internal processes, resources, testing, documentation, or supervision of any of the activities, in particular as regards detection of these systemic risks. And just one thing, we're not a university. The problem with access to data is for researchers is that normally it should be just for research purposes. We are a think and do tank. We want to take actions immediately as soon as our studies are out, which means that the data that we have are legitimate data, which come from which we got from the API, which means basically the interface of the social media, which give us access to the data. This wouldn't be the same, I guess, for Przemek.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Now, Alexandra is back. And Alexandra, are you ready? So we're all very eager. So we spoke a bit about, you know, the mechanisms and things, but now we're really eager to hear about the politics behind. And, you know, the over after finishing the talks, the overwhelming question from like everyone was like, what can we do against this? And this is complete madness. So what can the EU do?
Yeah, hello, Max. Ich glaube, ihr könnt mich so hören. Kannst du mir mal einen Daumen hoch geben? Weil ich habe ja zwar.
Hello, Max. I think you can hear me.
Bin ich nicht in meinem Büro, sondern direkt neben dem Plenum. Also einen wunderschönen guten Abend an alle. Ich komme gerade aus dem Plenum, wo ich über die akademische Freiheit beziehungsweise.
A very good evening to everybody. I was actually talking about the United States and the fact there is no freedom of opinion or next to no freedom of opinion anymore, given that interviews are manipulated. And if they actually, you know, just take power and they will cut freedom of opinion in the media, they will use disinformation bots, etc. And this will bring freedom to a quick and nasty end. Now, a solution, Max, this is what you're looking for. But let me say one thing first. Jemek, at the end of his presentation, he said that, well, one thing we don't know is the signs of the influence, you know. Does exert X influence on the AfD? Because we've only seen an increase by 1 to 2%. But I have a totally different perspective here. If you participated in the federal elections and the election campaign, you would see this differently, because migration hostile parties, political parties, make up more than 60% of the feed. You can only see the Bundessache Wagenknecht, BSW, and especially AfD, but also CDU were four times as present, and the Greens sort of disappeared. Then this means a debate on migration that actually none of the parties wanted to have, none of the parties like AfD, but it led to a migration debate or immigration debate, and journalists actually check on X or other platforms what's happening, what are the debates. So it's not just about individual voters who might be on X on TikTok and be voting for another party. It's a bit naive. I don't think this is the problem. What's happening is that topics are inflated, they come up onto the screen and the media deal with that, and then the discussion is sort of distorted for a long while. And this is something that we can see very clearly, and this is actually quite easy to measure, to prove. So what can we do? It's been touched upon, our wonderful DSA, the Digital Services Act, in the last mandate. I actually was one of the key negotiators, and I'm very happy that it had been mentioned here. Exactly, the exact wording of Article 34, these are the risk assessments. Risk assessments to be carried out by the platforms of more than 45 million users. This is a topic debate we've had on Europe Calling a number of times. So this is the magic bullet. So the Commission, the European Commission could say, well, if there is manipulation and influencing happening to this point, then we could see this as a systemic risk for the public debate. And if there is a systemic risk, now again, we'd have to define what is a systemic risk, a risk to the system. But yeah, if this risk exists, that we see the same trends coming up again and again. So 60 or 70% of the tweets, the comments have the same opinion, and this will take an influence on your standard media, like newspapers or TV information broadcasts. And that's a fact, and in that case, the Commission can take mitigating measures, mitigating action by posing requirements. A requirement could be that the algorithms need to be changed, for example. What we've seen is that, you know, the two studies looked at two different aspects. Now, some part we don't know. Elon Musk might have meddled personally. We don't know that, and we don't have the necessary data to analyze that. But this engagement, interaction, how much interaction is there behind comments and tweets and everything? So Kevin Kuhn explained that there is an artificial amplification via bot accounts, artificial amplification of content via these bots. And this simply means that the platforms must take care that there are not too many of these intransparent platforms. Perhaps not X, but other platforms have a turnover of 100 billion per year. They could afford paying security experts to check, you know, fact checkers, making sure it's people, not bots, making sure that there are not, I'm afraid you can't go down to 0% with bots. It's not that easy. But as Karin Kuhn explained, this is something that could simply be, could be prohibited, because it is a risk to the system. So the engagement, interaction, that's another factor. So the tweets receiving most interaction, most comments, etc., also like on Blue Sky, this is ranked higher and gets a priority. Most interactions, usually anything that's negative, that makes people angry or makes people afraid, this is what makes them react. So that they will get most likes or most comments, etc. There's been many studies. So incitement to hatred, disinformation, fake news, etc. This will spread more quickly than images and videos of cats or other friendly or encouraging messages in politics. So what we could say is the interaction-based ranking, if that is used as a criterion, this can be abolished. We don't need that. Because as you saw, the For You, the following feed, so you can only see the accounts that you really follow. That's something I suggested a long time before the federal election as an urgent measure to be taken to protect the federal elections. Only use that feed. You could still look at everything, you can view everything you like to see and like to read, but it's not Elon Musk who would take that decision for you. But there are different ways and means to create different algorithms. There's a lot of research into how to set up an algorithm in a way that it corresponds to what readers, users would like to see and read, but not hatred or fake news. So how much politics would you like to see in your feed? You know, are you much more interested in entertainment, perhaps? So what the Commission could do is make an inquiry and a survey looking into why this distortion is happening and why does, and using the fact that negative information spreads faster than positive information, and then each platform could look themselves in what way they would go about it differently. You know, this is not what the Commission can prescribe. But the Commission can say this is not okay, it's unacceptable because it's a risk to the system, and this would open the way to many other means. I have more ideas for solutions, but it depends on how much time we have.
So I'm switching back to English, so we now all go into English, so that's easier to talk with each other. So, and I mean, the top question, actually, I think it's one of the solutions you kind of alluded to. And that is, couldn't we in Europe copy X, Facebook, or any other platforms with maximal transparency, open algorithms, and socially intelligent rules and open source, and subsidize it by EU money? And, you know, we program it ourselves. So what about a European sovereign platform?
That's a great question, and that was the other solution I was going to suggest. How can we do that? That's a little bit more complicated. It's very difficult to subsidize this with public money because, I mean, we're talking a lot of billions. It's big money, and it's very difficult to get all that big money. I have become a little bit skeptical about public platforms, because we are seeing increasingly governments falling to the far right, who does exactly that, what Musk is doing. And the distinction between public and state is not always easy. And we have seen what Italy or Hungary, for example, have done to their public broadcasters. So I've become very, very skeptical about one big European public platform. What can be done are different things. One, there is an initiative that is called Free Our Feeds right now that comes from civil society. It's basically people who are saying we take the technical protocols for the technology on which Blue Sky is based. Blue Sky is an alternative to X, which with what we call algorithmic pluralism. So you choose your algorithm. It's not forced on you by the owners of the platform. The problem is Blue Sky is still controlled by venture capitalists. So what we want there, or what these people who are doing this say, they want to build a foundation, put the technology that you can use to build social networks into that foundation, then you have certain conditions to use it. So you can't abuse users' data, for example. You have to be totally transparent about your algorithm, and it can't be just captured by a billionaire. And then people can jump in, startups, people who want to give capital, organizations, and build social media on that. That could be clones of Instagram, X, and TikTok, but maybe it's something, you know, even better. Maybe we come up with great ideas because we do have the talent in Europe. So this is totally possible. I think one of the things is we need to get people, investors, people with big money, to come back to Europe with their money, because they invest a lot in the US in tech, and you know the conditions in the US are worsening. So we need that money, because it's not easy to build a social media just with public money or with little money in order to be able to compete. And we need to think about what advertising models could look like, because I hear a lot, like in the progressive area that Marx and I at least are part of, it's a lot about public, it's a lot about public money, it's a lot about no advertising, advertising is bad. I think to build a powerful social media that people really find attractive, because you need to get a lot of people to want to go there. Advertising is important, it just needs to be done correctly and not in the way it is done now. And there are ways to do that better, and so you have enough money. So I think that's absolutely the idea. It's something I'm working on. I think we have more news in May about how this is starting in Germany, and I hope it's going to get bigger, but this is definitely happening as a first answer.
Thank you. And another big question here is also from people, including Jan, asking the question in terms of, you know, Ukraine and cyber defense on the whole question of cui bono. So who's, you know, who benefits from all of this? Because this looks, you know, very, very elaborate, you know, those thousands of bots, those algorithms. So, okay, we have Musk, but, and then we have the AfD and the BSW supporting this. So maybe to Karin and Shremek, do you have, like, you know, when you need to answer the question, so what, I mean, there's also the kind of scientific answer. You describe what's happening there, you just describe the mechanisms, but why is that actually happening? Maybe you mentioned the Polish election, Shemek, maybe. Yeah.
I was wondering about this as well. I mean, maybe in the context of the election, NAFD, maybe it's a purposeful, I mean, the idea of creating bots to increase engagement numbers in order to, I was actually wondering why do they, who is doing this and why? Maybe it's because they want to be higher in the field, like they know, they knew that this is working, and you know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. It's just a way to kind of profit from the system in an unusual way. There's no punishment for doing this. If there's only gain, if there are gains, maybe that's what that's why they are doing this. I don't know whether it was the reason. I'm sure, Karin, you've been thinking about this much more than me. So I'm looking forward to hearing your opinion.
Well, I would say there is two different dimensions here. There is gaming the system and why they would do that. So obviously you could think it comes from some political parties which would like to get more visibility. But what we see so far in the studies we've conducted and what I've read in the scientific literature is that basically it mainly comes from far right parties. We see it in France, and there have been studies from Chavalarias, for example, who've shown that this is a phenomenon that has been developing slowly since almost 10 years. The same goes for Germany, almost 10 years. The same goes with Romania. Why? It's difficult to say how, it's a bit more easier, but what we've seen is that, of course, I don't know, but if I take the French case, for example, we know that there was information manipulation coming from Russia. It also came from Azerbaijan, for example, and they had a political interest because France took position slightly in favor of Armenia. So there was a fight between Azerbaijan and Armenia, and it also came from Azerbaijan, but whether the links ties also with Russia, with Azerbaijan, is difficult to say. I'm afraid I'm not from the secret services, so I cannot answer this kind of question. But the new phenomenon is that we see it on X, exactly. So it also comes from the US sides, and we need to analyze more. The things that we have is that the Digital Services Act look at social media one by one. We need to look at the modus operandi and the connection between the different social media in order to have a clear map. As I mentioned before, Telegram, Facebook, TikTok, TikTok or X, because they are trying to, some actors, whatever their reasons, are trying to game the system, and the DSA is here to prevent that. But may I say just one more word? I think that the EU Act can enter into play as well. Why? Because what we've seen, for example, in our study on X, is that you have bots which generate content using AI. And this is a prohibited practices if the aim is deceptive under the EU Act. And the EU Act entered into force at beginning of February. Sanctions will be up in August. So then we could use also the EU Act. And Commissioner Vekunen mentioned it actually in one of her speech. She said this could be also a possibility. So, but just to go back to what Alexandra Giz said, MEP Giz said also, I think indeed, in terms of influence, you also have to see in terms of effect that by putting these topics online and inflating their importance, like I mentioned to you, we found 15,000 comments about negative comments about immigration or historical revisionism on TikTok, right? What they do is that these parties which follow this, which promote these ideas, are becoming agenda setters. And all other political parties kind of react to these topics, and by that they engage, and these main topics become the main topics that politicians talk about. This is agenda setting. They don't, in the end, some people who have the answer to the why, they don't care what we say, if it's pro or against. They want us to engage with this topic so that we don't talk about other topic, or this key topic becomes one of the most talked about. This is what they want to achieve, frankly enough. There are tons of studies about that.
Thank you.
And can I come in on this, Max?
No, exactly. So I will give the word to Alexander. So we're running out of time a bit, which is, you know, it's a huge topic. And I think, you know, my mother is usually in the webinars, and she said this is probably the most difficult to hear, but also the most important she's ever heard on Europe Calling. So it's kind of, you know, this is my mother is usually very, very honest. And so I think that actually same goes for a lot of people. So, you know, it won't be the last time. So, so that I'm just saying this to kind of manage expectations. I also see hands up and stuff. We are really focusing on this right now for Europe Calling, because I think it's so central that everyone understands this, and we're building up the political pressure to change things here. So this won't be the last time. So I give a few more minutes to Alexandra, and then we need to wrap up. But Alexandra.
Yes, thank you. No, I mean, in general, all the research shows that Russian actors play a very active role. It's not always easy to attribute that precisely. This is probably why the researchers are not, you know, saying that. But it's, you know, in the past years, on every platform, there's always Russian actors involved. The problem is that now we have this kind of concurrence of Russian actors and US far right actors, and other authoritarian players want to destabilize European democracy as a whole. And that makes it complicated, because the Russian actors use the platforms very well. I mean, they know how to game it, they know how to do it, but the American far right basically owns the platforms, and that makes it a lot more complicated. Because in the past, I used to say, well, you know, Facebook, it's a business model. It's not political intent, it's just a business model that works to maximize profit and has this unpleasant collateral effect of destroying democracy. Now with Musk, it's different. And I think Zuckerberg as well has completely changed his mind, or has been forced by Trump, President Trump, to do so. This is, we don't know. But now there is really a declared intention to combat European democracy by the current US administration and some of the tech bosses, the tech oligarchs backing it. And the social networks right now, social media, are their Trojan horse to provoke regime change into an authoritarian regime in Europe. This is what J.D. Vance meant when he went to the Munich Security Conference, and he did not talk about defense. He did not talk about defending Europe, about defending Ukraine, which is what they should be doing, because they don't want that, because they want authoritarian actors to win. And what did he attack? He basically attacked the Digital Services Act. When he spoke about, you know, that there's no freedom of speech in Europe, this is even preparing for getting rid of it in the US. So this is the political intent. Russian actors and the current American administration overthrow the democracy and the freedom we have, and go towards an authoritarian regime, and social media, the way they work now, are their main instrument. This might just be my statement, but if you see where the US administration now puts the focus, it's actually not only on tariffs. There was an official communication by the current US government that says it will consider any form of digital taxes, any form of fines, or any form of interference with freedom of expression, which for the freedom of speech, which for those Americans means the algorithms, if we want transparency of the algorithms, any form of enforcement of the Digital Services Act, that we see that as a hostile act, and they react to it with tariffs. So they're basically blackmailing us. So there is a very, very clear political attempt, a political intention, even if we can't attribute everything. And I have the feeling that the European Commission is intimidated. You know, they're not saying, okay, we will not enforce the laws, but they are enforcing them in a very reluctant way, and they're absolutely not doing everything we can. I've been writing letters and speaking to Commissioner, Executive Vice President Virkkunen since November, because we knew from the US elections that Elon Musk was gaming the algorithms, and she never answered. You know, I've confronted her 3 times in open committee meetings with exactly these ideas I've been explaining. I've been writing letters, I've been passing this to colleagues on, and she always said, oh, you have such interesting ideas, but she doesn't do anything. And that's really the problem. And this is, Max, why you said that we need to build the public opinion and the political pressure to protect our elections and to protect our democratic space and our freedom of expression.
Alexander, Karin, Shemek, thank you so much for this. This was, I think, a very important 97 minutes. We'll come back to that. We'll invite you again, invite all the other people that you have also sent a lot of interesting studies into the chat, and people really asking a lot of questions. So this is only the beginning. We have done a couple of webinars on this, and we're doing more. We're trying to keep the pressure up. And if I may say, you know, when you look in the United States now, and Alexander, you spoke in the EP, now on, you know, the situation of scientists in the United States, and we saw that Columbia University, for example, completely caved into the demands by the Trump administration. So I really fear if even Columbia is doing that, you know, how will the commission stand up and, you know, not having that endowment, for example. I mean, there are so many aspects to that also in organizing the defense, because I think very importantly, and that's maybe my last point, the thing about this is what they also want. They want to divide us, you know, by using that narrative of freedom of speech and saying, oh, in German, it's like Meinungsfreiheit. So they're violating our freedom of speech. They actually want to divide us because, you know, it actually resonates with quite a lot of people when you tell them, you know, they are curtailing my freedom of speech. So, you know, this must be something bad. So the EU must be doing something very bad. And it's actually quite the opposite because, as Karin and Cheng also said, the censorship and the curtailment of freedom of speech is actually done by the tech oligarchs, by the platforms, and not by the European Union. So always remember what they are trying to do is to take us apart so they can rule, basically. That's what I want to do. And, you know, they're saying this very openly. And we have also talked about this. So, yes, please, Cemek, of course. We are running over time. One
way to kind of get away from this potential criticism of censorship is to focus on transparency parts of the DSA rather than the intervention part of the DSA, and then, you know, make it really hard for them to criticize our use of DSA, because if the only way we use it for is transparency, though, how can this be censorship? Like, what do you mean? And you know, I think you said it that you know, Americans they don't want us to apply DSA. I'm not sure whether because it's you know, against free speech, but I'm not sure, like, when they say this, like when Zuckerberg said it, I'm wondering what does he mean. I don't think he means, I don't think he refers to transparency. I think he refers mainly to the other part, to the intervention part, because you know, again, like, it makes no sense. Transparency is against, you know, opposite of censorship. Like, it cannot be more opposite, right? So that's why I think maybe this is a way to kind of build, like, I think we have to, in the European Union, we have to make sure that you know, our citizens are aware of what the DSA is, and you know, that there is this transparency aspect of it. And, you know, like, maybe that they cannot focus on that because I think this is an easy sell. Like, you know, nobody can criticize this. Whereas the intervention part, like, I don't think we should be abusing the intervention part because like, for that, I think we really need to maybe, broad support in the opinion to avoid any divide.
So thank you so much. We were just leaving it at that. You see, we can continue discussing it. I wish you all a very nice evening. So you will get the recording to share it. Please share it with people. So very important, share the recording with people, share what you heard with people. And we will be back with this topic and other topics. Thank you so much. Have a nice evening. Thank you so much for the interpreters for the tremendous job tonight. And as always, and see you at the next Europe Calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.